Okay, Shavua Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is a daf Lamed Beit, and we are beginning this wonderful new parak, Echa Dinei Mamonot. All right, so what we were talking about before was basically the din of Drisha and Chakira, and the differences between but where Adim failed the cross-examination in Dine Momenis, which now leads into this next parak, which begins with the Dinim of Drisha v'Chakira, and the differences between Dine Momenis and Dine Nefashas. So says the Mishnah, Echa Dine Momenos v'Echa Dine Nefashas, both of them actually would require Drisha v'Chakira in terms of the Iker Din D'Oraisa. Shenemar Mishpat Echad Yiyelachem. You have to have the same judicial procedures when we're talking about this idea of emet nachon hadavar. Ma bein dinei momonot o dinei nefashot, but that is not a hekesh for all things. The Mishpat Echad Yelachem, as Tosas explains, we're talking about only those questions that we were referring to, the judicial procedures of Drisha v'Chakira. But in terms of the inin of Yitzilu Ha'eda, we've already seen that that is a unique kind of situation, which is only nogea, the Hatzalah, and therefore the inyonim that have to do with schut v'chovah is really a completely different topic, says Tosfos. And that explains how this Mishnah goes on to, after saying Mishpat Echad Yelachem, and suddenly going on to say, so what are the differences? There shouldn't be differences, but there are indeed because of issues of zechut v'chovah. So ma bein dinei mamonot dinei nefashot dinei mamonot, as we saw, that's beferish psukim, that we have shlosha dayanim, dinei nefashot was with hesrim v'shlosha dayanim. Then we have the zechut v'chovah issues, dinei mamonot potchim bein zechut bein l'chovah. It doesn't matter how we start the case. So the Beis Din can start its deliberations assuming the worst or assuming the best if we're talking about a civil case. But if you're talking about Dinei Nefashos, you must begin with an indication that we are opening up with the assumption that this man is innocent. And we'll see exactly how we do that in the Gemara. Other differences are, of course, that Dinei Mamonot are Matin al Pi Echad. We only need a majority of one, and this would be Bein Eschut Bein Lechovah, if we're talking about Dinei Mamonos. But, as we saw, it's Acharei Rabim Lahatot, but Lo Tiyu Acharei Rabim Leraot, which means that in order to Paskin Lechovah, we need to have a majority of two, which boils down to, normally, a majority of three, because you can only split your Beis Din of Esrim V'Shlosha if you've got 13 against 10. Of course, we explained that nonetheless, there would be cases where it would be done out with a majority where we were most even al hadayanim. Another difference is that, so but when it comes to the nefesh, let me just finish that in the Mishnah, matin al pi echad l'schut v'al pi shnayim l'chovah. Dini momenes marzirin bein l'schut bein l'chovah. New evidence comes to light, new witnesses come in. We actually will reopen the case. Whereas dini nefeshot, if we've already decided that this guy is guilty, and then we'll reopen the case and we'll try to find him innocent. But if we've already found him innocent and now we have new evidence indicating that he's actually chayav misa, then ein marzirin lechovah. We're not going to reopen the case once again. That's the double jeopardy kind of idea that filtered into civil courts. Dinei Mamonos, hakol melamdim zechut v'chovah. When it comes to Dinei Mamonos, we've got all of our three rows of the Talmidim that are in front of the Beis Din. Anybody who has something to say is welcome to stand up and to offer insights into the din. Masha Ein Kein, when it comes to Dinei Nefashot, so any of the Talmidim, so to speak, I mean, they're not necessarily Talmidim, but they're not on the actual Diyun. Anybody can get up and say why this man should be found innocent, but they cannot stand up and say why he should be found guilty. So, in malamdim chova. Furthermore, dine momenus amalamet chova malamet schut vamalamet schut malamet chova. When it comes to dine momenus, you could change your mind and you could say the other party is chayim if you are a judge. When it comes to dine nefashot, If you were on the side of those who were finding the defendant guilty, you can change your mind. But when it comes to the Malamed Zechut originally, you cannot, you can change your mind, as we'll see later, when it comes to the Psak. Obviously, you don't say something you don't believe. But you cannot be actively engaged in persuading the other Dayanim of the person's guilt, and therefore be Goren that he should be Chai of the Misa. So, Malamed Zechut, Eino Yechol Lachzor, Velo Lamed Chuva. Dine Mormonas, Dinin Danin Bayom, Vigomrim Balayla. You can actually be Gomer Adin in the nighttime, as long as you started in the daytime when it comes to Mormonos. Dini Nefashot, Danin Bayom, but you cannot be Gomer in Balayla, and you can't be Gomer on the same day. You have to wait till the next day, because Dini Nefashot, Danin Bayom, not only Danin Bayom, but Dini Mormonot, you could finish on the same day. You can dismiss the case, you consider the defendant innocent, even if it's on the same day, but if you want to paskin that he's guilty, you're going to have to wait till you sleep on it, and you can only pronounce the verdict of guilty on the next day. Because of this, we're not going to have a din where the verdict, and therefore we have to carry out the chiyuv immediately, because otherwise that's called inui hadin. We don't believe in keeping people on death row, not for 2 seconds. So therefore, since it will be usur to do the actual din on a Shabbos and Yontif, so because of that, we don't do the din on Erev Shabbos, because we're going to have to paskin the next day. And of course, we won't be able to carry out the din. Dine momonot, well, for that matter, anything that doesn't involve a chiyuv means, let's have a question whether something is tamei or tar. Matchilin min hagadol. So we always give kavod to the gadol hadayanim to ask an opinion. Mashenken, when we're talking about dinin nefashot, we always start min hatzad. We start from those who are sitting at the side, the ktanim yoter. And that's because we don't want anybody's opinion to be swayed by the fact that the Gadol HaDayanim has already made up his mind that this guy is guilty. You have to be free to make up your own mind without the Lo Taneh Al Riv, not arguing with the Gadol Sheva Beis Din. And over here, the person's own psychological disadvantage in being able to consider the case after he's already heard what the Gadol Sheva Beis Din believes. Another important thing is that your yichus does not matter when it comes to the kashrus of being done dine momenas. So it doesn't matter. Even a mamzer is kosher. There's no chiyuvim of being similar to Moshe Rabbeinu, which run itcha, means similar to you. When it comes, however, to dine nefashos, ina kosher l'dine nefashot, you have to be either Kohen, Levi, or Yisrael, and your yichus has to be a yichus that allows you to marry into the kahuna. So says the Gemara, I don't understand what you mean when you say that dine momenus requires drisha v'chakira. I don't get it. Me be'inan drisha v'chakira? And it does not seem to be a din of drisha v'chakira on dine momenus, because there's a halacha that ashtar, unless you have like a loan document, and it says in that loan document that the loan was made at a very strange time, the first day of Nisan during the Shemitah year. We're like, people don't usually make loans during the Shemitah year, because at the end of the year, the loan is going to be Meshumat. And Edim come along, and the Edim say, well, you guys who were signed on the shtar on the first day of Nisan in the Shemitah year are obviously lying. Because, hey, chatem eidim ashtar zeh, v'alo b'yom ploni imanu hayitem b'mokom ploni. You weren't even in the place where that shtar is dated as signed. So how could you possibly be signed on that shtar? Makes no difference. The shtar is kosher. The eidim are kosher. Because chayshinan, remember, does not mean that looks suspicious. It means we suspect. Suspect does not have to be on a suspicious thing. So we suspect that the shtar was actually post-dated. There's nothing wrong with post-dating a shtar, and only the person loses his right to collect. So even in a case like this, where it's sort of strange that a person would post Eid Ashtar into a Shemitah year, because it makes it look a little bit strange and people are going to lift their eyebrows and say, sure, the star is kosher. Even there, Chai Shinan, what we do is we take the positive suspicion. In other words, the Chai Shinan, Shema, Ichru, Vikitfu, they may very well have dated it at a different date. And the Eidim don't have to be present on that date, as Rashi brings the other cases as well, where you can, if you know when Ashtar, the actual event took place, the loan took place, so you can write the place in the time that the loan took place, even if it's not what you're currently standing in or writing about. So that could be the case too. Now, I don't get this. If you're going to tell me that these Eidim have to stand up to Drisha v'Chakira, that's ridiculous. I mean, in the Drisha v'Chakira, in the cross-examination, they're going to have to say what really happened, right? Okay, tell us precisely, where were you, and what date was it? Forget about what's written. Like, what exactly happened? If this was a shtar that was mu'char, then it would come out in the Drisha v'Chakira. The Drisha v'Chakira is what is necessary to be used for the Hazama. So, obviously, Yisak HaDat Amina Drisha v'Chakira, how could we possibly suspect that it's a post-dated shtar, Shem Ichru V'Katfu, if we know for a fact what happened according to the Eidim directly? Really now, says the Gemara. So, I mean, this is your problem. V'latainech, I mean, if you think that this is a problem, so what are you going to do with the Mishnah that we have in general? So, Tichulach HaMasnisin. We know that we have a Mishnah that says very clearly that the shtarot that are written, this is the general din that we found in Masechet Shviyos itself about shtar echov. So it says over there in the Mishnah, shtar echov ha-mugdamim are psulim, the mu'ucharim ha-ksherim. Now explain to me how exactly the mu'ucharim could be ksherim. Because since we're going to be finding out that what is written there is a lie, because you're going to need, according to you, be in a drish of hakira, so then why would they be kosher? They're obviously mixik ashikra. I mean, it says something that did not stand up to cross-examination. So then this would have to be viewed as a forged star. So this, the whole thing, is that a question? So then all starot should not have a din of being able to be mucharim. No, it's true. We could have asked that question. We didn't ask that question because we feel that this question is better. I'll tell you why. Because our mission is talking about a crazy case. It's talking about where the post-dating was during the year of Shemitah, which no normal person would want to post-date his shtar to. If you're writing a shtar at a normal time before Shemitah, you would write that this shtar took place in the middle of the Shemitah year, which at the end of the year is going to be Meshameh the loan, and everybody's going to say, this is very, very strange, and would immediately suspect that it's not for real. So, okay, here in this case, I would think to Oshichi Inchi de Musfi, normal people are not going to lend money in the middle of a Shemitah year when it's going to be, in just a few months, it's going to be canceled. And there, maybe we wouldn't say it doesn't make sense to suspect, so to speak, that it was properly done because it was post-dated, because no person would want to be the Lomar Ashtar. He wouldn't want to make his shtar look like there's something suspicious about it and attract attention. Nonetheless, we're going to accept it. So since, look, it's dated in Nisan. You know, from Nisan to the end of the year is another 6 months. So what's the big deal? You're right, it looks a little weird, but there's certainly nothing that indicates to us that it's a forgery. And therefore, Machsherina. So that, I understand, so the Gemara would rather use our Mishnah as quoted rather than to use the overall din, that shtarot ha-mucharim are kosher. That I can answer. Fine. So I'm answering you why I asked the problem from here and not from the Mishnah about all shtarot and shviyas. But anyway, you didn't answer my question. Question stands. I'm asking you how our Mishnah could say that Dine Momenis are completely subject to Drisha V'Chakira. And that would mean that the shtar would not be kosher. So what do you tell you? So we've got a number of different answers about this issue. Amar Rabbi Chinina, it's true. our Mishnah but was talking about a Dioraita. It was based on the Mishpat Echad Yelechem. That is certainly correct. The Dvar Torah, Echad Dinim Omenos, Echad Dinim Nefarshos, actually do require Drishon for Hakira, as the Mishnah said. Shenema Mishpat Echad Yelechem. Obviously, we don't really need Drisha for Chakira, as you pointed out, because that would ipso facto turn all these shtarot that would be post-dated puzzle, and we know that can't be true. So there must be a takona not to have Drisha for Chakira. Well, why would we have made a takona like that? Umata mamrudine momono trobi ina Drisha for Chakira? Well, we know the standard answer to why the Rabbanan made it easier to recover your money in court. And that's kedei shelotino delet bifnei lovin. In order for you to find witnesses that could stand up to intensive cross-examination, all you know is, you know, what am I going to get involved in this? And then the guy's going to get himself a good lawyer, and that lawyer is going to torture my witnesses, going to make them look like idiots, and that way I'm never going to get my money back. So this is the kind of thing that happens. And so because of that, the Rabbanan made a takana. We don't want high-powered lawyers driving witnesses crazy, and we will not allow this level of cross-examination. So this is a takana to allow the free flow of money in a capitalist society. Wait a minute, but if that's true. So then essentially, we are telling the judges, in Dini Mominis, gentlemen, you're judges, but you can't really do your job. What? No, you're not going to be able to cross-examine the witnesses. Well, I mean, so then why would I be held responsible if I mess up and I make a mistake? You're not letting me do my job. So you can't at the same time tell me there's no din drisha for chakira and then say that if he's to'eh, he has to pay. The din should be to'o lo yishamu. Why should they pay? Well, we can't do that. We need suckers for judges. Because if we're going to say that they don't have to pay, so then people are going to say, then for sure it's going to be tin odelet if they love it. What do you mean? There's no consequences to making a mistake in the courtroom? So why would I lend my money if, you know, who knows what this judge is prejudiced by? I'm not interested in that. So because of that, it's the same takona. If we're going to be mitaken, that there's no drisha v'chakira, then obviously we're going to also have to be mitaken, that the judges are going to have to pay if the mistake is made. Anyways, you're saying, so it'll be hard to find judges. Okay, fine. So what can you do? But people do like to be judges, you know. Looks very good on a CV. So because of that, we're not too concerned about having a breakdown because not enough judges. Rava says, no. The Mishnah says that you need Drisha v'chakira. Didn't say anything about the Rabbana making a takana. But the Mishnah makes perfectly sense if we're dealing with Dine Knasot. Ah. Now, Dine Knasot, those are similar to civil cases. There's no issue over there when it's Nogea. The issue of Hodos V'Halavos, on the other hand, there, you're right, we cannot have Drisha v'chakira, that's where we have a takona, but the Mishnah's not presenting just a diraisa and expecting you to figure out that it doesn't apply. The Mishnah means exactly what it says. There is a din of Drisha v'chakira. Of course, it doesn't obtain to all cases of Dine Mominis, but if you're talking about Knasot, where, I mean, what do you mean? People are going to lend money? What does Knasot have to do with lending money? Absolutely nothing. So when it came to lending cases, the halva'ot case is fine. Enochinami. In those cases, you're right. We do without Drisha v'chakira. But here we're talking about Dine Knasot and the Braisa was talking about hoda'ot v'halva'ot. We're over there. Enochinami. The Rabbanan made a takana that you don't need for hoda'ot v'halva'ot. You don't need Drisha v'chakira because of the free flow of money. Rav Papa says, I'll give you another answer. I would say we take it a step further. Both the Mishnah and the Braita could be talking about hoda'ot v'halva'ot, okay? However, there is a special additional care that is given in cases where a case looks suspicious. Now, there's really two ways that we use these words, din miruma. If a din is really miruma, the judge has to disqualify himself. A din miruma, that is a true din miruma, means that the judge feels that these Adem are not saying the truth, or something like that. Or he knows that there were monetary considerations that might have been under the table, and he saw these people speaking with people that might have suggested giving him money. He has to disqualify himself, say, I'm not going to be donning this din merumah. What we're referring to over here is a suspicion of a din merumah. So in cases where the judge has a sense that he does not want to go according to the letter of the law. The letter of the law would allow you to say, look, the witnesses said, what do I got to know better than the witnesses? God said, trust the witnesses. I trust the witnesses. But in a din merumah, you can't say that. You have to do din emet la'amito. And that, therefore, requires that you got to put those witnesses through hell, which Risha v'chakira, very intense cross-examinations. So in the Mishnah, we're talking about a din that looks like it's a din merumah. So because of that, you have to do Risha v'chakira. Masha'in Cain in the Brisa, where we're talking about a standard kind of case where we need to have free flow. We don't want these high-powered lawyers in our courtroom backing up cases that are going to take 3 months instead of 3 minutes. And because of that, we cancel that requirement if there's no sense in the judge that something is fishy. And we know that there's a major difference between a din merumah, meaning a din that looks merumah. Remember, there's something that's called a real din merumah. We have three layers, right? Because we saw from Reish Lakish, the Reish Lakish points out that the Torah seems to contradict itself. On the one hand, we learn, B'tzedek tishpot amitecha. Okay, of course, we're supposed to do things with absolute justice. But then we have another pasuk that says, tzedek tirdof. Was tzedek enough, or is it tzedek? Well, I mean, there must be meaning to the tzedek. Tzedek means go forward in a way that doesn't leave any stone unturned. So when does it say tzedek, and when does it say tzedek? Ah, says Reish Lakish, that's the whole point. Haketzad, in the pasuk that says tzedek, that's referring to a din merumah. Here, where the Torah just says, tzedek tishpot amitecha, that's where it's a standard situation. It doesn't look very dangerous in any way. So over there, Enochinami, we don't have a problem, and you don't have to go through the typical tzedek of the very vicious cross-examination. It's another answer. Ravashi says, look, the Mishnah, you could take any of the answers that we had. I don't know which one is the right one. One is the Raisa, one is the Rabbanan. One is a din merumah, one is not a din merumah, one is din eknosis. I don't care what answer you take over there. They all make sense to me. But what does not make sense to me is the part about what you just said about Reish Lakish. The tzedek versus the tzedek. For that, I have a different approach. So the teretz on the Mishnah that you just pointed out is this contradiction with the Braita. That, whatever you want, take one of the three options over there. Matnitin kirishanina. But the pasuk in which one says tzedek and one says tzedek, I'm saying that there are two dinim, not what Reish Lakish says the difference between a din merumah, but rather that tzedek tirdof is talking about a way in which you should try to avoid, in certain cases, you should try to avoid the tzedek by pushing a pshara. And that way, if it looks to you like you're more likely to come out with a pshara, so then fine. But it all has to do with the particular situation of the din. So sometimes it's tzedek, and sometimes it's tzedek. So therefore, you need to have a full sense of what is the best way to get the best results of a just solution. And for instance, here we have a braita that actually spells that out. Tzedek tirdof. So one of these refers to just tzedek, to din. And one of them refers to pshara. There's times where a din is not going to get you justice. For instance, let's imagine a case like this. Shtei svinot ovrot benahar. So we've got two ships that are backed up in the Panama Canal. They can't possibly get through together because they're too big to be in one pass. So what happens? If they both try to go through at the same time, there's a good chance they're going to sink. So if one is willing to wait their turn, so fine. Then Bezacher said, they're both going to get through. One's going to be delayed. It's going to cost a lot of money to be delayed. There may be, you know, $100,000 fine for every day delay in getting to port. I don't know. Or let's say you have two camels that are going up Ma'alot Beit Charon. We know that's the classic example of a mountain pass where if you've got two animals trying to go at the same time, one of them's probably going to fall. So if the Poguzeb is Imalu Shneem, Shneem Noflim. Bezacher said Shneem Olim. Okay, what do we do? So, I mean, is there justice? No, there's negotiations. So you have to, if you can justify, there is a way to justify. You could take a look and see where the bigger losses are going to be incurred. So let's say Tu'una V'she'ina Tu'una. Let's say you've got one ship or one camel that's loaded to the gills. Okay, so the other one doesn't really have much merchandise. It's not going to get into much trouble. There's not much that's going to be spoiled. There's not many deals that are going to be lost. So there's obviously a greater emergency to get the actual score at the port, right? Or let's say you have one of them that is near port, and the other one's going to have still a few days away. Well, let that one get ahead. But what do you do if there's no basis for saying, well, it's more just to do it this way? What if they're both krovot? Or both rechokot, or they're both tunot, and so on. So then what you do is you make a compromise by making a compensation that one of these boats is going to pay the other boat so that they're both sharing the losses, basically. So I'll tell Pshara Benin, Umalot Sachar Zulazo. So let whichever one is going to go first, let them pay the difference in the value for them, and we'll see who's willing to pay. So that is ipso facto, a determination of what is more just. Pana Rabbana, tzedek, tzedek, tirdov. Here is another meaning to tzedek, tzedek, tirdov. You have a perfectly good bezdin, but you would like to go to a more qualified bezdin. The greater Talmid HaChachamim, there's the G'dayli Hador that may be in one location, not in another location. That tells us that you should go to the best bezdin that's available to you. And therefore, the tzedek, tishpot amitach is a reference to the dayanim. Tzedek, tzedek, tirdof is a reference to the bali dinim. If you guys really want justice, try to find those who are the biggest bekiyim in the cases that have to do with you. So go, if necessary, go to Lud, where Rebbe Eliezer is a famous person in Lud. Go to Rebbe Yochanan ben Zakkai in Baruch Hayo. Tana, and indeed the Braisa says, once we mention Bror Chayil, fascinating minhag that came up, at least as we see in the Yerushalmi, came up during the time of Roman persecutions, where over there, they had to figure out signals when the Romans wouldn't allow, so they wouldn't allow bris milah, they wouldn't allow pidyon haben, according to others, and according to others, they wouldn't allow a shalom zachar. So anyway, they couldn't send out invitations because the Romans would hear about it. If they put it on the internet, they were going to find out WhatsApp was already crap. And so what are they going to do? So they had to make a code. Same thing happened in other places where they would do their old shtick of stealing the bride out from under the chuppah. They couldn't announce a wedding coming up. So in Bournay, which is a town, what they would do to indicate that there's a bris milah coming up is they would have a lot of noise of grinding during the day. Now, that would remind people, of course, in those days, if you're getting medications ready, so then the pharmacies are grinding. Remember, think about medication that you go out and buy already. And that would, why are they grinding? Ah, there must be a bris where you're going to need antiseptics, you're going to need the things to cure the child. Fine. So that was just a simon to make noise, to let people know, ask around, where's the bris? Want to go to the bris? They are basically saying, Shavua ben, Shavua ben. Again, I told you before, Shavua ben, some learn as the bris. It's simple explanations over here that you want to make a lot of noise on grinding. How about in the town of Bror Chaya, once we talked about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, in Bror Chaya, where they were very worried about announcing that there would be a wedding, so they would light candles. Or Haner b'Bror Chaya, that's a sign There's going to be a chasana tonight. Look around and try to find out where it is. If you light it during the day, obviously, what the heck? Okay, that's very interesting. The Tosfos says that this also is referring to a bris milah, and it's the Suda, you know, and the minhag, says Tosfos, of lighting the candles at the bris milah may actually come from this Gemara. Because why do they do that? And there's some Rishonim even bring that at the wedding, why do we go down holding these big candles, or even that they're torches, really, they're bavukas. Also based on this, that became a simon of a wedding. It's fascinating. Tana Rabbana, another issue, tzedek, tzedek tirdof. What that means is, again, speaking to the Balei Dinim, Halech achar chachamim la'yeshiva. What you want to do is you want to go to places, and this actually is fascinating because the Rambam is we're going to see tomorrow when we talk about Gadol Milena B'chosma B'Minyan. The Rambam Shita about Minyan is the number of chachamim that are associated with that Besdin and that go along with the Das of the Besdin. So therefore, if you have a major yeshiva there, that means that you have a lot of Talmid Chachamim that are constantly involved in discussing cases and so on. Choose a Besdin in a place like that. So Halech Achar Chachamim LeYeshiva, you know that you'll have the most chances of having your case peer-reviewed. A lot of people will be talking about it. And that's why we said, go to Lud. That's where they had the very big yeshiva, Rebbe Eliezer. Go to Rebbe Yochanan Ben Zakkai in Baruch Hayo. Go to Rebbe Yeshua in Bekir. Go to Rebbe Gamliel in Yavna. If you're near Bnei Brak, tough situation, go to Rebbe Akiva. And go to Rebbe Matya. If you're in Chutz Lorenz, you're around Rome. He had a beautiful yeshiva in Rome. Rebbe Hananya ben Tradion had a beautiful yeshiva in Sichni. So many places in Barnea's neighborhood, even Rome. And go to Rebbe Yossi in Tzipori, and to Rebbe Yehuda ben Becerra, of course, in Etzivim, another Barnea neighborhood. And follow Rebbe Yoshua all the way to Pumpadisa if you got to, and go to Rebbe in Beit Sharim. And if you have access to Lishkas Hagozis, you're living at the time at the Beis Hamikdash, that's great. Even though there may not be a big yeshiva there, there are tremendous rows of Talmid Chachamim in front of the Beis Din Yeshiva, the Echad. Oh my gosh, it's amazing. Tremendous peer review. But peer review is very important. The next thing that we had in our Mishnah is that in Dine Momenis, we open, it's not quite clear, you can open either L'Schus or L'Chova, but if you're dealing with a possible Chi of Misa, so then you cannot say anything that would be in favor of prosecution. And in fact, you have to talk about acquitting the defendant. So I mean, what do you say? Because, I mean, what we're assuming is that we actually say this to the Aiden, because we had made the difference before in the last paragraph. We talked about scaring the Aiden and telling them these things. Well, how would we let the Aiden know that we're interested in pursuing the actual acquittal without influencing the Aiden's willingness to be involved in this case? So what would you say? Well, Rav Yehuda says, well, we just say to the witnesses, you know, how do we know that we could trust you? Mi yemar ki dekamrita. Says, Ula, that's crazy. If you say that, so they're gonna shut up. Well, chasmiya. Lo. So what, they don't trust us? So, I don't know. Maybe you shouldn't trust us. They're not talking to people who value their testimony. You may end up turning these Aidim off, maybe pulling out before they give you all the details, or before they go through the Chakira. Says Ula, who cares? It says the Gemara to Ula, who cares? Bilichasmo, so shut them up. Listen, Milo Tanya, Rebbe Shimei ben Eliezer, Aymer, Masina Taidim, Imakom Limakom, Kadesh Titarev Datan, Reatzurubayan. Remember, one of the things that we do is before we take them into the cross-examination chambers, we take them to one room, and then we say, this is not a good room, let's try to find another office. We drive them around from one place to another place until we drive them nuts, so that they should just give up. And that way they'll say, all right, forget it, we don't know anymore, we're so mixed up, we don't know what we were doing. So then, I mean, if you say that you're ready to do that, then you're going to wear the witnesses down. And so obviously we don't care. We're ready to do that. Ah, come on, says the Gemara. Ula's 100% right. You don't see that there's a difference between making the Edom tired, which is only going to impact Edom that are feeling very unsure of what's going on, and versus saying to their faces, well, you know, I don't know. You guys look like a bunch of liars. I mean, that's what they're hearing. It's completely different. In that case, where you're walking from place to place and they get tired. Fine. So asa memela kamitcha. Okay, you may, in an indirect way, affect them. But here, chedachinli b'yadayim, you're telling them openly, who's to say we should believe idiots like you? I mean, that's crazy. So what Ula said is absolutely valid. You can't do that. I'll tell you, says Ula, the way in which you can open l'schus is we say to the other person, not to the Aiden, we say to the defendant, so we say, well, you hear what those Edom said? Do you have Edom that can be mazim these Edom and show that they're lying? Said Rabbi, mazim these Edom? If you're mazim these Edom, then these Edom are going to be killed. That doesn't make sense. What's you're opening up this guy's acquittal by opening up the door to another guy's death? You know, does that make sense? V'chipotchi b'zchutor shel zeh, shehi chovator shel zeh. I don't understand why you would do that. Well, what's wrong with what Ula said? It's not chovato. Remember, we're not going to kill Edom Zomamim if the court hasn't already paskened, right? That says that refers to the Mishnah. Ein Edom Zomamim neheragin ad shigamer hadin. That's the Mishnah Makos. Until you complete the case and the verdict has been given, there's no problem. I mean, of course, we won't accept their testimony, but they're not going to be punished in any way. So what do you mean we're opening the door to getting rid of them by trying to save the other guy? We're not affecting them in any way. They're not going to be punished. So why are you saying that that's so terrible? Well, says the guy, they may not be punished if we would go through with this right now, but the bottom line is that if the guy doesn't say anything, this is what I mean, said Rabba, if Shasikai, Adamigmar Dine, so let's say we ask the defendant, do you have witnesses to actually be mazim them? He doesn't say anything. I'm looking into it, he says. So suppose he doesn't find Aiden and he waits until the court says that he's chayiv, then he brings the Edom. So he's going to get those Edom knocked off. So essentially what we're doing is we're playing games with the Edom's lives in order to create a better psychological milieu for the accused here. Does that make sense? That's what I was asking to Ulis and Rab. Look, I'll tell you what it means when it says potrin. It means we say to the defendant, do you have witnesses that will disagree with these witnesses? Not that we'll be mazin these witnesses, they'll be makish these witnesses. And that would mean that we won't accept their testimony, but then they're not necessarily the liars. Maybe the other Edom are the liars. It's not going to affect their din in any way. Rav Kahana says, look, opening up l'schus can be something very general. B'shum ofen does not have to be an accusation against anyone or opening up the door to accusation. You know what we do? We tell the witnesses, look, gentlemen, we hear what you're saying, but it seems to us, based on this, that we're going to have to acquit the defendant. That's all that we say. I'm not accusing them. We're saying what it is that we feel about how the case is shaping up. That's all. And that only creates a psychological atmosphere in which there's a sense of searching for source. That's what we say. Abayev Rava Dharmit Abayev, it has nothing to do with how the case is going to work out. What we want to do with this poster in Moskos has nothing to do with the overall ambience of the case. It has to do with the ability of the defendant to present his own case properly And we're afraid he has witnesses and they're saying this stuff about him. He's just like, he's so shocked. He can't even say anything. He can't argue for himself. That's the point. So what we do, and we're going to see this from a pasuk actually, what we do is we tell him, "I lo katalta lo titchap." Don't get all nervous about these witnesses. If you didn't do anything wrong, nothing's going to happen to you. And says Rav Ashi, we could do it another way. What we could do is we could announce a general announcement. So we want him to see that we're in his corner. That's all. Anybody that knows anything about this guy, please come and stand up for him and let us know what a good guy he really is. That type of thing. But actually, Abaye Varava, who said that what we're interested in is telling the guy, don't worry, if you didn't do anything wrong, they definitely seem to be right because we learned that from the pasuk. Take a look at the bright. Tanya Gavasi Abaye Varava. Rebbe Yomer, when we have the Kohen who's going to be giving the woman to be drinking the Mesota, so what does he say? Im lo shachav ishotach, v'im lo satit tachat ba'alech, hinaki. If you didn't do anything wrong, nothing's going to happen to you. Well, what does he have to say that for? Obviously. I mean, we're trying to poison the woman. I mean, so what does that mean? It teaches us. That's how Rebbe understands the meaning of the pasuk. And that means, what is the meaning of l'schut? L'schut is this nekuda. If you didn't do anything wrong, don't worry. So the ikar l'schut is an order that it should not be nistatem ta'anotav, exactly like Abaye Varava suggested. Okay, Rabbosai, looking forward, Bezrat Hashem, to be able to see you tomorrow, and we can continue our diyunim about diyunim. B'sirot tovot, and hinei el yeshuati, iftach v'lo refchad. Difficult times, difficult times. Shavua tov u'mevorach.